This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng, and on the Breakfast Grill this morning is a CEO of Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, or LIAM. Mark Odell, good morning and welcome to the show,
good
Mark.
Good morning, Julian. Thank you.
And currently, only one third of Malaysians have insurance coverage. Bank Negara wants that coverage to be about three quarters of the Malaysian population by 2020. And today, we'll talk about how the life insurance industry is going to get there. So according to LIAM numbers, the per capita sum assured rose from 43,000 ringgit, this is the coverage, sum assured coverage. 2017 to 46,000. But LIAM actually estimates that each person needs at least a coverage of 100,000 to 150,000 to support dependents in the events of death or disability of the breadwinners. So what strategies are going to be adopted to get there?
Well, I think if you look at today's environment, right, when you look at the fact that there's a wide range of product available now to Malaysians, right, including the recent introduction a couple of years back of Perlindungan Tenang. So you have at the low end of the range premium affordability of 3 ringgit a month. And then you have the high end of the range, which can be more or less what anyone would want to spend, right? And so you couple that with the fact that most Malaysians have bank accounts, then it's really not about access. It's really about education and awareness. So I think the key to driving a penetration rate is to really bang on improving education and awareness.
Now, as part of the life framework of 2019, we see the removal of limits on commission rates and implementation of what are called minimum allocation rates. This refers to the minimum portion of annual premiums that must go to the policy. So when we talk about affordability, are we seeing the liberalization of the commission structure, which is now very expensive, I believe 170% of the first year premiums of traditional policies and 160% commissions for investment linked policies? So will this lead to cheaper commissions?
Well, I think it's too, first, the short answer is it's too early to tell how, you know, what the outcomes will be in terms of commission or premiums. But I just want to add, maybe there's a bit of a misconception about the distribution costs, because the distribution costs are actually spread out over 10 years, over the life of the contract, actually. And so actually Malaysia has one of the lowest rates of first year commission costs of any market around ASEAN. But nonetheless, I know that it's a point that's important to consumers.
Well, if we look at some of the data, and this data that's collected by the ISM Statistical Yearbook in 2017, agency remuneration was 4.2 billion ringgit. And also as a percentage of in-force premium, which is Liam's figure of 36 billion, is 11%. As a percentage of new premiums of 10 billion ringgit a year, this is 40%. So 40% of yearly premiums is going to agency remuneration. Surely this has room to come down.
Okay, maybe I can just add a little bit of light to that, right? So the 4.2 billion is total remuneration over the life of contracts. In this case, you're talking about distribution costs or agency, right? Mm-hmm. So the 11% is a more accurate number, not the 40%, because you compare the 10 billion is only first year premiums. You can't look at total remuneration for 35 billion over 10 billion.
I know what you're saying, but a lot of the commissions are front-ended, right? So you're really talking about the first 5 or 6 years of premiums.
Really, 6 to 10 years, yep.
Going to agency commission. In fact, I think over the first few years, you're talking about 40%, 30 to 40% per annum of commissions, of premiums going to commissions?
Yeah, the first year would be somewhere in that range. You're absolutely right.
30 to 40%.
Right.
It's pretty expensive. And you know, the online models are also coming out. Do you think that this has the effect of lowering commissions?
Well, that's a very interesting topic as well, because when you look at online, actually, you have different expenses for acquisition. Actually, you have to spend a significant amount of money on advertising and other ways, right, to attract consumers to your websites. So the jury is out, really, whether it will result in dramatically lower premiums. I know the policies are priced. Most insurers put the policies out there online, priced lower than agency, the policies you can buy from agency. But still, I think having worked for a couple of insurers in Malaysia trying to do online insurance, there's a great deal of investment that needs to be made in distribution costs as well, but it's not to an intermediary.
Well, I've done actually a lot of personal research on this, going to the various online platforms of established insurance companies, and it just feels as though that the proposals that are or the quotes that you can get online, the premiums are a fraction of what would be quoted by the agent, to the extent of, let's say, 10%. 10%, you can get, for example, a 100,000 policy or a 200,000 coverage policy for 10 ringgit a month, whereas if you go to an agent, that same policy would cost 100 ringgit to 200 ringgit.
Well, I'm not sure it's the same policy. I think you might be comparing term insurance to, say, investment link or other types of policies, because the term insurance you might be online would probably be 10% lower than the term insurance that you might buy for the same premium and coverage, or same death benefit and duration from an agent. It's really comparing different types of insurance, I believe.
Okay, that's true. Most of the agents would sell whole life insurance. And when you go online, most of the policies that you can get would be term insurance. But that still raises the issue about affordability, right? And Bank Negara's target. So if you want to achieve Bank Negara's target of 75% penetration rate by 2020, which is just next year, we are at 35% right now, or below 40%. If lower premiums from a term life policy can get us there, isn't that a path that can be followed?
Well, I mean, I think the association and its members are all in favor of it doesn't matter, you know, to our members about the type of insurance that people own, as long as they own it and they own more of it, or according to their needs, right? So I just want to point out another figure which talks to the affordability issue, right? If you look at the amount of life insurance premiums to GDP in Malaysia, we still lag developed markets. It's not as if, there's not room, right, for additional expenditures for households for life insurance. I really do think that it's about education and awareness. And the same point applies to term insurance. People will buy more term insurance if they really believe and are interested in how much protection they need. Because that's really, if you look at a young family, a growing family with children, they can't buy all the insurance they need unless they turn to term insurance. I'm a big believer in that.
You're a big believer in term insurance.
I am.
That's a good thing. And if the major insurance companies in Malaysia were to push a term, or rather the online route of buying into insurance companies, how would this affect the agency model, and how would they sort of retrain themselves in the onslaught of the online business model?
Well, let me say, I don't think it's really about term insurance at the expense of any other type of insurance, really. I think it's about doing a proper needs analysis with the customer, determining for the customer's sake how much insurance they need, looking at the amount of budget that the customer can commit to fulfilling that need, and then recommending the appropriate solution.
You don't think that the online policies would be in competition with the agents, you know? Because I just give you a personal example. All right, recently I cancelled my agent-driven policy, which I've had for 10 years, mm-hmm. and I went directly online to the same company, and I managed to on top of the cash surrender value that I got, which pays for my premiums for the next few years, I slashed my monthly premiums by half just by going online. Right, so effectively, the online model has just outcompeted the agent-driven model.
Well, I guess I wouldn't look at it that way. I mean, I think, and I really don't think that online is going to disrupt the traditional advice models face-to-face, because I think it really depends on how the customer wants to interact, how the customer wants to buy and consume insurance. And I think there's plenty of room for all types of channels in the marketplace.
And you talk about term policy earlier, and this is where most of the online. Do you think that there is a need to understand the difference between term and what most insurance companies sell, which is the whole life policies? That there is this feeling that selling the whole life policies are there to support commission earnings of the agents, and there is a need to sort of move forward and dismantle this now, or at least educate the public that the benefits of insurance coverage, which are very, very important, can be obtained through term. Your mention of the advisory model, I think it's very, very important. But is there a need to highlight that importance that you can get immediate coverage of just by buying into term policies?
Well, again, I think it's first, I think the more the consumer is educated, the better for all stakeholders, right? And I think that would lead to increased penetration by itself because people will realize the value, especially during those peak earning years when one has a family, right? So I don't think it comes down to, again, term versus other types of products, but I think the more people understand term insurance, the more people understand their needs, the more informed they will be about the decisions they make and what type of policies they buy. For me personally, I've been in the business for 39 years. I own a lot of term insurance. I own a lot of other insurance, including investment link. And I think it really comes down to the total objectives for what one wants to get out of that purchase of that product.
So to me, the crux of the term policy is this, and believe it or not, I'm trying to be neutral here. I'm not trying to be on one side of the policy or another. But the benefit of a term-based policy is that you can use the same front-loaded dollars because you front-load the premium payments for a term policy. But it's too expensive. So you can actually go for a term policy as opposed to the whole life policy. And use those extra dollars to get extra coverage. And the extra coverage would fulfill any needs in the case of any calamities that may happen today, tomorrow, or in the short term, right? That is so important to highlight, isn't it?
I agree.
Whereas the practice today of the agency force is to prolong the policy. Is there something wrong with that?
Well, I just want to say I don't think it's the practice of the agency in that way. I've worked in six different markets in Asia, and I think that across the board, most Asians want to get some money back for the monies that they pay for their life insurance policy. So the idea of term insurance is still lost on many consumers, the fact that you're actually paying for coverage that you may not – you will not actually see the benefit personally, right? Your beneficiaries will. So that's why it comes back to education, because what an individual buys when it comes to term insurance is peace of mind. That's what I buy when I buy term insurance, right? Because I will never benefit from the proceeds. So I think, again, it comes back to education and awareness.
Yeah. We'll have to talk about more of this bang for the buck in terms of premium policies, optimizing the coverage and getting the cheapest premium out of this. We're coming back after the break and talking more about the insurance industry. Mark Odell, CEO of Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, is on The Breakfast Grill this morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Good morning and welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. We are talking insurance with the CEO of Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, Mark Odell. Mark, the investment-linked policies have grown very strongly over the past few years. In 2018, the sum assured in force for ILPs are double of traditional policies and have grown by 18% in 2018. And also, in-force premiums have grown by 13% compared to a decline for traditional policies. What is driving this huge shift to investment-linked policies?
Well, I think we're seeing that investment-linked remains the most popular choice for consumers today. And I'd like to characterize the investment-link really as flexible, transparent protection. It is the most common vehicle for Malaysians to purchase protection in the form of the death benefit their family needs, in the form of other riders, and supplementary coverages.
But isn't investment and insurance protection? So when you link the two, again, we go back to the issue of affordability, right? It has the effect of really pushing premiums up.
Well, you certainly spend more when you're actually saving money within your policy or investing money within your policy to pay for future insurance costs. But really, investment link, and as well as other types of traditional plans that run for long periods, your premiums are high in the beginning, so that it creates a surplus to pay for the actual higher cost of coverages later on in life.
Yeah, so we go back to the argument of whether we need a level premium policy, because with a standardized premium rate for the next 20, 30 years, you're basically overpaying in the early years and paying less in the future years.
Yeah, you could say that.
Which has the effect of actually making policies very short term, very expensive in the short term, and over sort of undercovering in the longer term. So when you mix the two, should there be an advice to people that they should buy term and then invest through other methods like, you know, online investment advisory and so on?
Right. Well, I think it's a matter of personal choice, actually. And one thing that I'd like to note is that with the life framework, every sales illustration now that is presented by an agent or other intermediary has to include a comparison to term insurance. So, I mean, hopefully, and I advise all consumers to make sure that they fully understand the sales illustration and they can make their own decisions based on their own needs and desires.
Okay, talking about that, Bank Negara actually, you spoke about the life framework, and
right.
Bank Negara introduced the balanced scorecard, which is supposed to be effective from January 1st, 2018. And balanced scorecard will touch on issues like the suitability of advice, continuous services, professional development and ethical conduct and professional conduct. How is this going as far as the balanced scorecard is concerned? Do you think that agents have the ability to advise on investment linked because they're two different products, right? Investment and insurance are two different products.
Well, I think you've talked about a couple of different things there, right? I think the balanced scorecard is meant to incentivize intermediaries, both bank intermediaries and financial advisors, as well as agents, to do a quality job with their customers, right? So there's different key performance indicators, right, inside the balanced scorecard, there, and those are all meant to quantify, if you will, right, the quality of the job that the intermediaries are doing, and reward them or penalize them, right, if they're doing according to their result.
So the BSC is supposed to capture non-sales KPIs, mm-hmm. And to have a remuneration policy that addresses any bias or mis-selling. Is there wide incidences of mis-selling in the investment linked policies policies?
I think wide instances would not be the way to characterize it. I think in any market, and again, I've worked in many markets, there's always going to be a remnant of the distribution, no matter where the distribution stems from, that may not provide accurate information to consumers, and you could characterize it as mis-selling. But I don't think there we should taint the tens of thousands of quality agents with the practices or the behavior of a few.
So Bank Negara came out with these guidelines to streamline practices, would you say?
No, I think it's really to emphasize and drive increased professional behavior, right? So agents and bank representatives and financial advisors can earn more or earn less depending on the quality of the work they do. And so I think right now, I think it's quite early days. We're only into the beginning of the second full year. And I think it'll take some time to change or to drive behavior in the direction that the balanced scorecard wants it to go. And I think it'll take several years because, there's about 100,000 people out there who are distributing these products.
Yeah, and that was the question that I was putting to you earlier about how this 100,000 people can sustain their rice bowl into the future with the challenges of the online model. And earlier on also, Mark, when we were offline, you were talking about some fear-mongering rumors of premiums in the investment policies.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because really, there's a message that I'd like to get out to your listeners, and it's about investment link and about new guidelines that are going into effect starting in July, and again, some phased effects starting in January. So just a bit of a background. So investment link, as you know, is quite flexible. You determine the premium. The customer determines the amount of insurance, determines any riders they want to add, supplementary coverage. And then your premiums go into a investment bucket after deducting of charges for acquisition and for expenses. In that investment bucket, the customer decides which type of funds, based on the insurance company's offerings, to put their money. Then from the bucket, every month is deducted the insurance cost charges for the coverages selected by the policyholder, right? But given the flexible nature of these types of policies, things can vary. The insurance premiums can go up or down based on the customer's desire. Investment returns can vary year by year, so it's very important for the customer to understand and review periodically the sufficiency of the level of premium he's paying to maintain the coverages he's chosen for the period of time he needs, right?
So, sounds very complicated.
It is a little bit complicated.
For an investment linked policy.
Yeah,
and yet, it's the best-selling policies over the last few years.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering where that is coming from. And is it fair, is this a fair statement? The average agent does not know how to give investment advice. And through my line of work, I've also seen the proposals, in fact, the enforced policies of many of my friends who have been recommended that young people recommended that they go into a conservative investment, a balanced investment, which does not do a lot for their long-term investment goals. Is that a fair statement? Does the average agent know how to give investment advice?
Well, Julian, can I come back to that and just continue on a little bit on the new guidelines and a bit about the misinformation that's floating around social media? The guidelines come to effect in July 1, right? And there's been some misinformation going around social media that premiums are going up dramatically after July 1 as a result of the guidelines. That's completely false. Let me explain why. First, I like to explain the guidelines in relation to a current policyholder and a new policyholder, okay? For a current policyholder, they will receive annual statements stating how long their ILP is expected to stay in effect with the current coverages and the level of premiums being paid. They'll get a generic statement on what is sustainability, that we're talking about sustainability, starting from July. Next year, they'll get an annual statement, a personal annual statement on their own policy, saying how long their policy is expected to last based on current assumptions, investment returns, and the level of premium they're paying. They'll also receive some information if they change any of those things, change the premium, go on premium holiday, withdraw money, they will receive an update on how it affects their policy. In each instance, they'll be given advice by the insurer that if their premiums are insufficient to cover for the life of the contract, what would that recommended premium be? Now, each policy, though, still according to the terms of their contract, each policyholder can still vary their premium to any levels that they want to throughout the lifetime of the contract. But it's important to keep in mind that by paying less than you need may shorten the duration of the cover.
But Mark, that seems like a very complicated pitch, right? It's very hard for the layperson to understand all this. And it boils down to what the policyholder needs. Do they need insurance? And if they needed insurance, how much coverage do they need? And if they needed investment, where do they go for that, right? Do they go through an ILP, which... in your words, very complicated, or did it go more to a straight up plain vanilla investment advisor?
Well, I do agree that investment link is more complicated than term insurance, certainly. But I think it's still a matter of choice.
It's not only the insurance that's complicated; it's the investment that's complicated as well.
Well, then you would probably say that all investment is complicated.
Yes. So would you then encourage people to seek professional investment advice?
Of course, people should seek professional investment advice, but I just want to come back to the important point on ILP, right? For new policyholders under the guideline, it's completely false to assume that after the transition, after the guidelines come into effect, their premiums will be going up, because even though new premiums will be set at a level to sustain the policy throughout the life of the contract, the amount of premium that a policyholder pays over the life of the contract is completely up to the policyholder, right? So if one buys a policy today or one buys an ILP after July 1, it's exactly the same.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Mark Odell, CEO of Life Insurance Association of Malaysia. I'm Julian Ng for The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile for unlimited experiences. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.